Final hour DDC on this Tuesday afternoon. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick here with you. Mitch Light from The Athletic. Let's go on and get your college football juices flowing. Yeah, I know it's June. It's late June. It's going to be here before you know it. A little bit over a couple of months. They're going to be kicking off for real. Mitch, how we doing?
Good. Good, Darren. And I know not necessarily specific totally to this market, but there's some Buckeyes down here. Literally, as I was on hold talking to the great Elijah, five-star wide receiver Brandon Innes from Florida committed to Ohio State, which is noteworthy because it's noteworthy, a five-star kid. But, you know, if you follow college football, you know that Ohio State obviously recruits well, and they especially the wide receiver position. This stat is staggering. Since 2019, they have signed 16 wide receivers. Assuming this class signs, 13 of them are top 100 players nationally, which is, I mean, you know, that's kind of the barometer. People say five stars, you know, a lot, but there's only like 32, 35 five stars a year. Like, the top 100 are program changers. And, you know, that's a program that I work with closely because I work with Bill Landis, our Ohio State writer. And the amount of talent at that position is as good as any position in college football, I think, over the last 20 years at Ohio State. And I don't think I'm exaggerating.
Yeah, but you know what that means, Mitch. Payroll is going to go up. Ryan Day is going to ask that. Now how much is that going to cost them? How much is payroll to keep this roster together?
Yeah, and Carnell Tate was a five-star who committed yesterday. From Chicago, but he plays at IMG. And we ran a story written by Manny Navarro out of Florida, our Miami writer, but also covers recruiting. And, you know, take this for what it's worth, but Carnell Tate was like, yeah, I mean, obviously NIL plays a factor, but, you know, I want to go Ohio State because they develop great wide receivers, and, you know, you're really going to make your real money in the NFL, and that's what I want to do. So I think that's, I don't know if refreshing is the right word. That's sort of like, I think, what we all kind of want to hear about NIL and stuff. So no doubt that money is playing a role in all this for all these top 100-ish kids. But, you know, Ohio State, when that news came out a couple weeks ago, it was more like, hey, this is what the money we need to keep our current guys, quote-unquote, happy, not necessarily as inducements to get guys.
Yeah, you probably knew they were going to have their foot on the gas after Michigan, right, last year. So not surprised.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, too, and not to make this too Ohio State-centric, is though they have been recruiting skill players at this stage for several years, and it's been mostly great for them. But they need to get better in the trenches, and they made some changes. They fired their offensive line coach, brought in Justin Fry from UCLA, and so that's one thing about if you follow Ohio State recruiting, every Ohio State fan, though, they need to start getting – they have not recruited the tackle position great, and that's sort of like what they got pushed around at the line of scrimmage by that great defensive line at Michigan. So Ohio State's going to be great, but if they're going to be a national championship team, they need to start recruiting better on the offensive line.
They used to. They used to pump out all kinds of Orlando Pace and those cats. They were pumping them out every other year, big time tackles especially. All right, I'm gonna pose it this way. We're going to leave Alabama, A&M, and Georgia out of the mix, so not allowed. A surprise team, and you can tell us why this is your answer, the surprise team in the SEC for the good will be whom? Who is going to come out of nowhere and have a, whether it's a bounce back year or just surprise everybody and have a big year? You can't do Alabama, A&M, and Georgia. Where are you going with this?
I think Kentucky is the not default answer. I think that's probably, if you asked me that, one of you guys might have done that. Like last time I was on, I might have said Kentucky. So I'm going to take them out. I'm going to go Florida. And it's kind of crazy. Maybe that's why they have a new coach. We're thinking of Florida being a surprise team. And I don't really have a lot of tangible reasons why I say that other than just kind of faith in the new coaching staff and the juice you get from a new staff. I think Anthony Richardson, you know, he was a weird guy at quarterback last year. You listen to all the Florida fans, you listen to all the Florida media, it's like, this guy's amazing. Why won't they commit to him? Why are they playing Emory Jones? And then Richardson got hurt, and then when he did play some games, he wasn't great. But I think I've heard great things about him this, you know, offseason. They did get Jack Miller, the transfer from Ohio State, but I'd be very surprised if it's not Richardson. So I think we're going to see just kind of a rejuvenated Florida program that had gotten a little stale there. And I say that partly because, like, after Georgia, it's there for the taking. I mean, I'm looking at my friends at the Athlon, you know, obviously where I worked for a long time, and picked Tennessee to finish second in the East, and that's a very rational, I can see. Well, they have a three-way tie with Tennessee, Kentucky, and Florida, but that's a very rational decision there. So I think any three of those teams wouldn't surprise me at all if they finished second. I think there was a line after that. I thought South Carolina, while impressive under Shane Beamer in this first year, I thought they were kind of a little smoke and mirrors there. They didn't have too many quality wins. And so, you know, so I guess my long-winded answer, Dan, would say Florida. I just like kind of the direction of that coaching staff.
Is it the hardest part about Ole Miss and Mississippi State? And Dan Mullen found this out at Mississippi State, and the Ole Miss coaches over the years that have had success have found this out, right? It's just hard to sustain it, right? You can have that year, but it's hard to come back and do it again, right? That's probably the biggest challenge that they have with those two programs. Well, you know where I'm going with this. So they what did Lane and the Rebels go, 10-3 last year, the second in the SEC West? So what does this year look like? Is there any chance that they can sustain this? Can they actually get better, or do you anticipate a drop-off?
Yeah, there's such a fine line between winning and losing. There's so many good teams. It's sort of a cop-out answer. You know, I always compare college football to college basketball. You know, it's sort of like in college football, you play 8 conference games, and literally the bounce of a ball or an official's call can be the difference between a 5-3 and 4-4, 6-2. You know, 6-2 versus 5-3 is just an enormous difference in kind of just the feeling around the program. And college basketball, you get 18 conference games, some leagues 16, some 20, and there's just more margin for error there. So I feel a lot better about Ole Miss because what they've done in the transfer portal. I mean, Jackson Dart was a really good recruit for USC and was really good last year. And, you know, presumably be their starting quarterback. They get Zach Evans in, who has an interesting career, but was a 5-star recruit to TCU. And when he played, he was really good. I think he averaged over 6 yards a carry in the Big 12, which is very good there. So I'm a little more optimistic about Ole Miss than Mississippi State. I think their overall talent is better. Again, I think Alabama and A&M, clearly the two best teams in the West. After that, you can find, you know, LSU. I mean, obviously a talented team. And then Arkansas, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Auburn. I mean, it's the same story. It's like if we knew at this time of year, like, what's going to develop? What's going to happen in certain quarterback positions? It'd be a lot easier to make these predictions there. But those are two programs there where I think high floors and low ceilings just because of the competition they play.
Tennessee, Josh Heupel. This has been another thing with them, right? It's been a while since they've been able to sustain anything. It's been a long while. So there's buzz. Everybody felt like Josh Heupel, it looked better than we thought it was going to look the first year. Now there's expectations, and this is what Butch Jones ran into. This is what they've all run into, right, that they haven't been able to keep following up with. So can Josh Heupel not only live up to that first year, and now he's got the expectations, can they take the next step forward?
Yeah, that's the one thing to caution. I mean, I clearly agree. They look better than I think most people expected them to look last year, especially after they made the quarterback change and the offense was dynamic and fun to watch. But we've been here before. With every Tennessee staff, it's like it's just natural. It's not just a Tennessee thing. It's every program with high expectations. You show some signs of life that maybe you didn't expect in certain areas in year one, and you get really excited. You know, we were here with Butch Jones and all this. So it's just can they capitalize? Can they sustain? And I think there's a lot of reasons to believe so. I think this staff is, I don't know, more grounded is the right word. Like, Butch Jones is a good coach. I still contend maybe if, you know, maybe Tennessee wasn't the best fit for him, but you look at every stop before Tennessee, and he did well. And maybe, I don't know, the job's, like, it's too big for him.
That's where I would go, yeah.
Yeah, just didn't handle things well. Like, if you gave him another shot at a big-time job, maybe he would handle things better. This coaching staff just seems to be far more, and I don't mean this in any way, like between the last two staffs, there's just more normal people on the staff. Like Josh Heupel is just a normal guy who's like grounded, and sure, he's got an ego because he's a college football coach and he won a national title at Oklahoma. I'm not saying he's just some average Joe. He's very good at what he does, but I just don't see them, you know, the slogans and all the stuff, and they can make a program, you know, you guys know what I'm getting at. So I think they're just, they're on the right track. It's all about recruiting, and obviously Tennessee's made some big splashes on in recruiting for a lot of reasons, and you know, they appear to have the quarterback of the future coming in, even though Hendon Hooker is very good right now. So there's no reason not to be optimistic about Tennessee. Long term, short term, you know, have they reinforced the defense enough, the defensive line? You know, we'll find out. But as I mentioned earlier, Darren, second place in the East would not surprise me at all.
No. By the way, I laugh at that, but it is true. Like, you know, Derek Dooley was weird and said wacky things. Butch Jones had all the slogans. And Jeremy Pruitt was aight and sounded like a high school coach. And so, to your point, it's like Josh Heupel sounds normal because he can, like, conduct a press conference and doesn't have all this other stuff attached to him.
Right. I mean, that's a compliment. He's a normal human being.
All right. Do you have can you stay through the break and answer a couple more? I know Willie wants to hit Vanderbilt and a couple others.
Yeah, sure.
All right. More with Mitch Light from The Athletic on the other side. But, Willie, you've got a word about QC Kinetics.
All right. Let's talk QC Kinetics. We're in the most active season of the year. People love getting outside. But, hey, whether you like to hike or fish or swim or whatever your interest is to stay active, if you have joint pain, that can be really tough to do. And whether it's in your hips, your knees, your back, your shoulders, it can take the fun out of living and doing the things you want to do. That's where QC Kinetics is helping people all the time get active again with advanced regenerative treatments from local medical professionals. This is an in-office, it's non-surgical, and it can repair and restore damaged tissue in your joints that's hindering you. It gives you lasting relief from pain. They've got over 100 clinics nationwide, and it's the nation's leader in these cutting-edge all-natural options, QC Kinetics. The patient satisfaction reports are excellent. So get real relief from pain with no surgery, no drugs, and no downtime. So don't put it off anymore. Call QC Kinetics and learn about this regenerative medicine. Get a totally free in-office consultation. Local number, 615-249-4024. That's 615-249-4024. 615-249-4024 for QC Kinetics. Back here on the DDC with a little Hall & Oates. They're underway in Omaha, Texas A&M and Notre Dame, bottom of the first, scoreless. It's a elimination game, and the winner of this game will have the right to try to beat Oklahoma twice. And so, Mitch, I know you did some work on The Athletic with a little preview, if you will, of the College World Series. Mitch Light is with us from The Athletic. We're talking college football, but I'm going to sneak one College World Series game in. And the other bracket, Ole Miss with an impressive win last night over Arkansas. And Ole Miss, maybe arguably the last team to get into the tournament, is now one win away from the final. Pretty interesting stuff.
Yeah, and this is, you know, obvious if you follow baseball or college baseball, and sometimes it just sounds like a cliche, and we talk about it, Willie. It's just like, more so than any sport, if you're talented, like if you're in the SEC, you're one of the top two-thirds of, you know, the food chain in the SEC, you got a lot of talent. It's just about getting there and getting your act together. And we've seen this time and time again. We've seen it with several Vanderbilt teams that clearly, you know, were, you know, not great during the regular season. The 2014 national championship team was 7-8 at one point, and then goes on to win a national championship. Ole Miss, famously this year, 7-14 at one point in the SEC. And that's why probably more so, you know, we love to talk about the bubble in college basketball. Really doesn't matter that much. I know VCU made the Final Four as a first four team, but for the most part, those teams don't advance past the first weekend. There are plenty of examples in college baseball of three seeds. You know, the Virginia team that beat Vanderbilt in 2015 was a three seed that barely snuck into the tournament. So, you know, Ole Miss clearly has a good offense, and the sophomore pitcher pitched last night. The kid, name escapes me right now, but he's from Mississippi, and sort of like what you see in college baseball from freshmen. It's like you kind of get them in out of the bullpen early in the year, and by late in the year, if they're one of those elite pitchers, they're one of your top starters. So, yeah, it's surprising, but it's not surprising that Ole Miss is playing well right now. What I want to see, Willie, in the College World Series is a good game. I've watched pretty much every game, and they're just for whatever reason, there hasn't been a close game yet.
Yeah, there hasn't been the great drama yet, but still a ways to go there. I don't know if Tennessee fans could feel better or worse. They're probably just disappointed regardless, but they just absolutely wiped the floor with Ole Miss early in the season, and now you're watching Ole Miss have a run here where they actually could be in a position to win a national championship. We'll see. and Texas A&M trying to stay alive for an all-SEC final, which is a bit of a long shot because whoever wins this game has to beat Oklahoma twice, which will not be easy. Mitch, back to college football. Darren mentioned Vanderbilt. I think a lot of people are curious. What kind behind the scenes, how much progress has Clark Lee made here from year one to year two?
Yeah, the interesting thing, and this isn't going to make Vanderbilt fans feel better, is like they could be the – this is a little bit of an exaggeration, but Vanderbilt could be the most improved team in the SEC and still go 0-8 or 1-7. I mean, if you watch the product in the field last year, and it's not necessarily an indictment of the new, not an indictment of the staff, they just weren't competitive. And, you know, the South Carolina game, sure, they could have, should have won that game. I would say that's in the should have won, not could have won. They should have won that game. But for the most part, they really weren't competitive in the other games. And, you know, yes, the behind-the-scenes stuff, and actually Joe Rexroad did our State of the Program story, which is sort of our previews, and spent a lot of time with coaching staff. And you know, this is stuff you'd expect them to say, but and Joe's going to write more of kind of a behind-the-scenes, like a film study with Clark Lee story in about a month or so. But the thing that stood out talking to some of the coaches, for Joe at least, is how much further along they were this spring than last spring, which makes sense. I mean, just as far as just knowing the system and athletically and all that stuff. And I think that you can say what you want with the freshman class. By Vanderbilt standards, it was very good. It appears that they really improved the athleticism, especially on defense. Now, will we see benefits of that this year? Probably not. I mean, those kids will play. But, you know, they need better quarterback play, too. I mean, when Vanderbilt's been good, whether it's Kyle Shermer or, you know, going back to Jay Cutler, that when the offense was really good, those teams didn't make a bowl game, but they've had good quarterback play. I think last year you can say the quarterback play was average at best, and going into the year, and you know, it looks like Mike Bright might be the starter right now, but that's far from certain. So they need improvement across the board. I would say they're pretty good at the running back position. Like, I think as a staff, they probably feel good about the running back position, and probably the top two or three wide receivers. I don't know about the depth of that position, but I think they probably feel pretty good about the frontline guys.
Is there a team that you right now are looking at nationwide as a team to watch? Like, who would be a sleeper that's maybe not one of the usual suspects that we think could have a really good season this year? Anybody you got your mind on?
You know, it's so much about, like, what are your expectations? Like, I think Utah is a legit national title contender. I don't think so. A legit playoff contender. They have done, you know, we saw them go toe-to-toe with Ohio State in the bowl game last year. They've got a lot of people back. You know, the quarterback is back. Transfer from Texas, they were fun to watch. So you know, it kind of depends on, you know, that's a consensus top 10, top 15 team that I think can be really good. I think Michigan State is an interesting team. You know, they looked really good at times last year. They've got the quarterback in place in Peyton Thorne, and then you put on the tape of that Ohio State game, and they look like they don't belong in the same field, and they didn't that day. That tells you, that's just an interesting case study of, like, sometimes how far the talent gap can be between two programs, like an Ohio State who didn't have a great year by its standards, but was like 65-0 in that game. But you know, Mel Tucker is recruiting very well. There's a lot of energy around that program. You know, Michigan had its best year in a long stretch there. So I, you know, they might be going away from the Big Ten divisions in a few years, but I'm still intrigued by the Big Ten East there, because you know, the balance of power, especially with Michigan State, the way it's recruiting and playing of late is really interesting. We have, you know, Penn State. Disappointing year last year. Do they bounce back? New 10-year contract. Is there less pressure on James Franklin, or is there more pressure because he's getting paid all that money and he hasn't delivered yet? So there's storylines all over the place.
One thing that's getting kicked around right now, really in more than one conference, we know the SEC at some point, they're going to have to address how to schedule, especially when Oklahoma and Texas presumably come into the league in a couple years. I know the Big Ten, there's an article right now on The Athletic about how to do a balanced Big Ten schedule, but as these leagues continue to grow and maybe there's a new format for the college football playoff, Mitch, what is, I've always contended these leagues are too big. It doesn't work very well. There's no good way to do it. But what's the best way to do a balanced schedule over a period of years in these huge conferences?
Yeah, talk about the get off my lawn way. You know, I've always said that I thought the old, after Florida State joined the ACC, that was the best way to do a conference. Seems weird. You have nine teams. You play eight games, four home, four on the road. It's better than the 10-team Big 12 right now, because then you don't have the 5-4. You know, certain teams get more home games than others. So obviously that's not going to happen in the Super League. I mean, I think the SEC model of nine, I don't have it in front of me, but you guys have read it, where you're playing, what, the three permanent and then six rotating, and it's set up where you don't go more than 2 years without facing any team, because it's ridiculous. I mean, what's it, like the Georgia-Texas A&M thing? They played each other maybe one time, and Texas A&M joined the league in 2012. I mean, that's absurd. It's like you might as well have two different divisions, which are different leagues, which they're not going to do there. So I am anti-division. It's fun to, you know, for teams to play for the SEC East and SEC West title, but it's just not the best way to crown a champion. And sort of as a tangent, Willie, to what you're saying about the Big Ten, just think about if they get rid of the divisions there. What does that mean for programs like Iowa, Northwestern, maybe even Wisconsin? You know, those programs have won Big Ten West titles because they've only had to beat each other out.
Right. In other words, Michigan, Ohio State have been in the same division, right, yeah, all this time.
And then Penn State. And then Michigan State's even won the East twice. So like in Iowa, great program, consistent, but now they got to beat out those four programs just to make and then Wisconsin or whatever, just to make the conference championship game. So there's certain programs around the country, you know, you can say the Pac-12 North as well, Pac-12 South's been wide open too. It's going to be more difficult for middle-tier programs in that special year for them to rise up and win a conference championship, because it's going to be more difficult to get to that game.
Yeah, division versus non-division makes a big difference for sure. Mitch, good stuff. Thanks a lot for joining us.
All right, we'll talk to you guys later. See ya.
All right, Mitch Light from The Athletic talking a little college football with us. Stay tuned. When we come back, we'll get you an update from Omaha, and we'll also turn our attention back to the Stanley Cup Finals and talk about ESPN's coverage. The ratings have been really, really good. And who knows what else we'll get into. We'll continue to get your thoughts on your favorite concert of all time. We've been giving away concert tickets to a really fun show that's coming to Nissan Stadium, headlined by Def Leppard and Motley Crue. So we sort of asked the question, what's your favorite concert you've ever attended of all time? Stay tuned. We're coming back here on 102.5 The Game.
Thank you, Penny. Don't forget the sounds. You just heard it. Getting ready to return to First Horizon Park. Gwinnett Stripers, the Bravos, tonight, 94.9, The Fan, 7:05. Sounds Baseball, presented by 312 Pizza and Farm Bureau Health Plans. Saw where, you know, we've been talking about the openings. We had to move Greg Wyshynski to tomorrow. The Lightning changed up their schedule, so he'll join us tomorrow. But we were talking yesterday about the openings, and it looks like one of the openings has been filled, and it really wasn't filled. It was just a tag was taken away. Jay Woodcroft, no surprise, has agreed to a 3-year deal with the Edmonton Oilers. So the interim tag has been removed, and I don't think this is not considered breaking news. He took him to the conference final. They did get swept, but Jay Woodcroft will be on the bench next year for the Edmonton Oilers. Let's go to our phone line, driven by Wilson County Hyundai.com. Dylan wants to weigh in on our question of the day.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. And just real quick comment. I did go to the Elton John Farewell Yellow Brick Road concert, and it was incredible. But he's just going to sing it forever. Another tour, so I'm sure he'll come back around. But so I wanted to go a little out of the box on it. Like, I've seen the Stones, I've seen Bob Dylan multiple times, I've seen a lot of people, but so I'm going to go, and I think Elijah may appreciate this, I'm going to go Kanye West at Bridgestone Arena on the Life of Pablo tour. He had a floating stage suspended from the ceiling, and he was just floating for everyone as the stage moved around. It was like nothing I've ever seen in a concert. So, and it was just incredible. I'm a big Kanye fan. So,
how late was he for his show?
Oh, gosh. You know what? It actually started on time. People were surprised.
Really? Yeah, I thought he was notorious for being like an hour late.
Maybe lately. And it was also on this tour. It was just a couple weeks before. So it was before Kim got robbed in Paris. If you remember, he got canceled the whole tour. So just got to see him just in time before that happened. So it was a wild show. I'll say that much. But
all right.
Anyway. Yeah, thanks, guys.
Okay. Thank you, Dylan. All right. We do have breaking news. So if you want to hit this, this is official. If you've got it there handy, Elijah. In the football world, Rob Gronkowski says he is retiring again. So it looks like Gronk has finally said, I'm done. I can't imagine another comeback. I don't think he's going to sit out a year and come back again. But it is official. Gronk is not coming back to the Bucs. A little bit of a surprise with Brady coming back. So he's what is he, 33? I know his body probably feels like it's 53, but Gronk's not coming back. Going to retire. That could have been in the fantasy, question. Now,
cross
what does
him
that
off
mean?
Your tight end list, I guess.
Right, which he would have been pretty high up there, I would assume.
More targets for Russell Gage, perhaps, in the early part of the season, while Chris Godwin's still recovering from his ACL injury.
Sure, if you say so. Do they still have 9 tight ends on that? Is O.J. Howard still on there? Do they still have Brate? Do they have all those guys still?
They have Brate. Howard was a free agent, I believe.
Really? Okay. Yeah, he was, but did he go anywhere?
Not that I know of.
Okay. Interesting. So there you go. Gronk out. They're underway in Omaha. Elimination game. Loser goes home. No score between A&M and Notre Dame in the second inning.
No score in the top of the second. Texas A&M has a man on second with 2 outs. Speaking of Notre Dame, saw this on Sports TV Ratings on Twitter. On ESPN2 on Sunday night, Oklahoma-Notre Dame outdrew the ESPN Sunday night baseball game.
Oh, wow.
By a very slight margin. But on ESPN2, Oklahoma and Notre Dame got a bigger audience than White Sox-Astros. I don't know if that's what
Man.
That says. I mean, it's great for the College World Series. It probably doesn't say much about the Sunday night
Whoa.
Broadcast.
That actually is
That's pretty stunning.
Really alarming.
Especially because if you had flip-flopped it, the margin might have been bigger, right? There's just always a bigger audience on ESPN in general. There's just more households that have ESPN.
Of course, yes. Wow.
That's pretty interesting.
Oklahoma-Notre Dame outdrew White Sox-Stros. Oklahoma-Notre Dame was on the deuce. Stroh's Sox were on ESPN. Wow.
1.33 million viewers for the College World Series, 1.1 million for MLB.
Man.
Ooh. Wow.
That is interesting. That's a great TV.
That's an
rating.
Interesting nugget there.
Yes, it is.
And meanwhile, the Stanley Cup final continues to have by far the best ratings they've had since pre-pandemic. And probably quite a bit beyond that, but they're averaging between about 3.3 and 4.3 million viewers. Game one had the biggest numbers, but they've sustained pretty well in games 2 and 3. And I would think because Tampa won game 3, you have a chance for a pretty good audience in game 4.
Yep. It is official finally in Dallas. The fun-loving Peter DeBoer has been officially named their next head coach. So the Stars going with Peter DeBoer, Mr. Smiley, Mr. Sunshine. But he's a good coach. He is. Unfortunately, because now they're in the Predator, they're in the Predators division, and he's had a lot of success. So I can poke fun at him, but he's had success. He just wears out his welcome pretty quickly because he's anti-fun loving. He is
right.
Anti-sunshine.
And it is quite compelling how the sort of the musical chairs of the established guys are in there. That's why it is refreshing. Jay Woodcroft, who was an absolute no-name, did
yep.
a really good job with the Oilers, so good for him for jumping into the club. You know, really with no pedigree of playing experience or anything like that. So
oh, I was the first to go, who?
Yeah. Like, who is this guy? But he did a really, really nice
well,
job.
Well, you know, we can bang on him all we want, but these guys have had success, so – you know, maybe if they'd stop getting rehired and just flop, then they wouldn't keep getting rehired, but they keep having success. I mean,
yeah.
Say what you want about Gerard Gallant. Everywhere he goes, he wins. Say yeah. what you want about Peter DeBoer. Everywhere he goes, he wins.
Peter LaViolette, John
Peter
Tortorella.
Peter LaViolette, John yeah. Tortorella. These guys, everywhere they go, they win. So Daryl Sutter, you're talking about Mr. Poopy Pants. Daryl Sutter's Mr. Poopy Pants. Well, guess what? Everywhere he goes, they win. So
notches,
you know,
on the belt.
And they're all here for a good time, not a long time. Because they'll win for a year or two. And then
it's kind of a five and done, right? I was going to say it's more like four years, you know, and then that's definitely done.
Mm-hmm.
But it's usually a pretty good 3 to 4 years, right? It's better than...
It's been a Barry Trotz kind of path since Nashville.
True.
He had the long run here and then, you know, sort of that cycle in Washington with a cup and then a really good run for the Islanders. And now who knows what's next? We'll see. It's still to be determined. Darren, another thing we were touching on earlier, wondering about, I'm just looking at the sports TV ratings. We were sort of asking the question, what kind of audience has the USFL had? So the regular season final week, they had a Saturday game on Fox. It averaged 649,000. So kind of comparable to Major League Soccer. Okay. So it's significant, not huge, but that's an interesting comp. I hadn't thought about it. Is, you know, how does USFL compare to soccer? With soccer now, at least the MLS season, sort of in the spotlight a little bit more, right? I would think the summer months is when you could have a little bit more spotlight on it. But all good questions.
It's good to know. Good to know. Matthew in Nashville on our text line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, said O.J. Howard signed with the Bills back in March or April. Okay. I know that I was interested in the Titans, but once they signed Austin Hooper, I think in March, I probably checked out on caring where O.J. Howard went. So, okay. But Matthew, thank you for the info. Appreciate that. John in Thompson Station says that he saw James Brown at the Tennessee State Fairgrounds in 1966 or 67. At the time, he was at Hillsboro High School. Wow. He said he also saw the Rolling Stones at the same time frame at the new Municipal Auditorium.
Awesome.
Which is obviously still kicking.
Still kicking.
How about
that?
We've
had some great ones.
Well done. Rebecca says, Kenny Chesney at Bridgestone on his birthday, probably 7 years ago. He played until midnight and had numerous guests. Joe Walsh, Taylor, wow, Grace Potter, and join him, I guess, up on stage. So truly epic. All right. Getting great. Great answers.
Had a wide range.
Yes. Chris in Gallatin, Rush at the Cow Palace in San Francisco.
What year?
Doesn't have a year.
Cow Palace has been around for a while. So
it has,
I guess,
been
so
a while.
Rush.
It has been around.
So that could be any year. That could be any number of years there, I wonder.
I saw Rush here and in Cleveland.
We forgot to ask Mitch. I wonder if Mitch would go U2.
I forgot that. You're right.
He and I went and saw U2 with a big group of people. We weren't sitting together. We started beforehand. We went to Satco and then walked over. But at Vanderbilt Stadium, you remember that one? I can't remember what year that would have been. Maybe 10 years ago. But they hadn't been to Nashville in forever. They were going to do it at Nissan Stadium. But I want to say, was it Kenny Chesney that had another? Something opened up date-wise because there was a commitment with the Titan Stadium, and Vanderbilt jumped in on it. It was so crazy that U2 put their set down on the field and replaced on their dime the entire field after it was over.
Yep.
But it was a really cool, like, surround situation because everybody was watching, and so they went to all areas of the stage to sort of play in front of everybody. It was really well done. It was cool.
Yep. Unnamed texter said best was AC/DC at Vanderbilt. I don't remember that. That had to have been before I moved here.
Yeah, that's got to be a long time
ago. Right? That had to have been a long time ago because I don't remember, been here almost 25 years. I don't remember AC/DC at Vanderbilt.
I wonder if he's talking about if it was in the football stadium or way, way back in the gym. I've seen some concerts in Memorial Gym, some good concerts, but
like,
man,
who?
The sound bounces off the walls like you would not believe. The Cult, I've seen the Cult at Memorial Gym. My ears, I think, have never been the same since. Like, they were ringing for like a full day. I was like, I still can't hear anything. It was so loud. This is a 90s band that was big for a while, but people might shake their head and say, I don't know about that. Remember Live?
Oh,
the band,
yeah,
Live? They had a good run of a couple albums.
Yes.
I saw them at Memorial Gym. Who else did I see there? One or two others. Those are probably the two biggest ones. Remember the, who sings it? The Cult of Personality. What's that band? Danny Glover's son, Corey Glover. Why am I not thinking
of... The Cult of Personality
is... That's the name of the... That's the big song they had at the time. Man, why am I blanking? That's...
I've got song... It's not... Was that
Living Color? They performed at Memorial Gym. We were just coming back from a road trip, the basketball team. So we walked into the locker room and we were basically backstage. We were like, "Hey, Living Color's playing." We just kind of peeked in there.
I just had the video in my head. Like, that's how far back you go. But like, I just always remember their video. That's why I was Living Color for sure. All right, good stuff. We'll come back. We'll put a bow on Tuesday's edition of the DDC next. This Thursday, the game will be out at Nissan Stadium in the South Plaza. That'll be during a two-hour window of our show, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Monster Jam is set to announce something really big. They've partnered with Second Harvest Food Bank, hosting a community food drive to support Nashville families facing hunger. So for every 5 non-perishable items donated, fans will receive 1 complimentary ticket to this Saturday's Monster Jam event. That'll be, of course, June 25th at Nissan Stadium. Tickets are available for the first 250 donations on-site while supplies last. Limit 4 complimentary vouchers per family/household. For more information, you can visit monsterjam.com. I said earlier, remember I told you, had some friends that told me down in Atlanta, that show that's coming up that we gave tickets away to earlier, they were playing at Truist Park. Tommy Lee wasn't drumming. Well, somebody, an unnamed texter, texted in and said that Tommy Lee broke 4 ribs. That's why he hasn't been playing the full show. So I didn't know that. So thank you for passing that along. Kathy says, U2 at the Oakland Coliseum. Which last night, after, I'll be honest, I started getting losing interest in the Avs Lightning. I started watching Moneyball. I'm just saying. I still love that show. That is just one of those movies, again, if it's on, I'll stay with it. I'll watch it.
Forever changed baseball, Moneyball.
It really did.
I had Michael Lewis on early when the book first came out.
Mm-hmm.
And that when we were doing a show a couple of stations ago. And, man, I mean, I was fascinated by that book, but I had no idea it was going to take over. It's just a household thing now.
When you're watching it and you just – if you put yourself in Billy Bean's shoes and just think about what's at stake for him and you decide to go this route with Jonah Hill's character, and I forget his name. I forgot.
Paul DePodesta.
That wasn't his name in the movie.
I thought it was.
No, that wasn't his name in the movie. I don't think.
I'll look it up.
Okay, look it up.
It doesn't. So, it's insignificant to your point.
I don't know if you've done this when you've watched it, but I'm thinking, like, you know, he went down this road, and can you imagine when things were horrible and they were in last place and everybody's calling for your head and all the scouts have basically told you you're nuts. Your manager's telling you you're nuts. You have no idea what you're doing. What are you doing? Are you just trying to tank? Like, what is happening here? And just what that was, and he stuck with it. He could have pulled the ripcord, right, and gave in and said, okay, this is not going to work. And instead, he dug in deeper and it worked. Nobody believed it was him and Jonah Hill's character.
Yep, Paul DePodesta.
Really?
Yep.
I don't remember him saying that. Because remember, he went up to him after the meeting with the Indians at their office. Like, who are you? He's like, I've told you. And I guess he did say Paul DePodesta. And he's like, no, who are you? And he's like, I'm Paul DePodesta. He's like, basically like, what are you getting at? No, I want to know, who are you? Where'd you come from? Why are they listening to you? And he's like, well, they're not listening to me. But it was interesting because they, you know, them at the time, no one understood what the heck they were doing. Like, you have lost your mind. You've lost your marbles. You're crazy. And, of course, they stuck with it. So it was pretty cool. David on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. David in Old Hickory saw Janis Joplin in 1967 at Monterey Music Festival. An unforgettable performance.
Goodness.
Yeah. We have had...
That's awesome.
We have had some great answers. Unfortunately, we weren't able to get to everything. So there's some news and notes before we get out of here. Notre Dame, Texas A&M, no score in the third inning, although there are bases loaded for A&M.
And no out.
Bases loaded for A&M. No outs. So there's been a meeting. There's a meeting at the mound. Deshaun Watson, his attorney, Tony Busby, has said they have settled with 20 of the 24 women in the civil suit. So a confidential settlement of 20 of the 24 women. Jay Woodcroft will be back on the bench for the Edmonton Oilers. Peter DeBoer is the new head coach of the Dallas Stars. Lots of things going on today. We'll try to do it again tomorrow. Or we won't try, we will. We'll do it again tomorrow.
Do or do not, as Yoda says.
Yes,
there is no try.
There is no try. We will indeed do it again tomorrow. Be safe today. Try to stay cool if you can. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. We will talk to you tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock. See you then.